Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. It's not only gas prices that are up this year. According to the United Nations, global food prices remain close to record highs that they reached in March following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In the U.S., the Consumer Price Index for food is up more than 14% since 2020, and that number is much worse in other places. In Lebanon, for example, which gets the majority of its wheat from Ukraine, the CPI is up over 3,000%. Yes, 1,000 since 2020. One significant factor in these high food prices, a Russian blockade of Ukrainian exports. It's having a cascading effect that's threatening the world's food security, especially in the most food-vulnerable nations. Last month, during an event organized by the U.S. State Department, UN Secretary General issued a warning.
Global hunger levels are at a new high. In just 2 years, the number of severely food insecure people has doubled from 135 million pre-pandemic to 276 million today. More than 500,000 people are living in famine conditions, an increase of more than 500% since 2016. These frightening figures are inextricably linked with conflict as both cause and effect. If we do not feed people, we feed conflict.
With me now is Anna Nagurny, Chair in Integrative Studies at the Eisenberg School of Management, the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and a board member at the Kiev School of Economics. Welcome to The Takeaway, Anna.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
What's going on with the blockade of food exports in Ukraine right now?
This is a very, very serious topic, and it's really, really important to be broadcasting to the world what is going on. Since Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th, 2022, there have been major issues in terms of agricultural production and also in terms of agricultural supply chains. There are now silos that are heaving with grain, okay, that has been grown in Ukraine. And the demand is huge in many countries, which you had mentioned, for example, in the Middle East and also in Northern Africa. But typically, 90% of the grain that was harvested and grown in Ukraine would be shipped through the Black Sea. That is no longer possible because of the blockade and also the mining of the ports. Okay. At the same time, the new harvest is on the horizon. And typically in Ukraine, from July to December, that would be very busy time for the exports. There have been all sorts of other discussions going on in terms of different transportation routes, but that is really not the solution. So this is a crisis that has to be, you know, paid attention to. The next couple of weeks are absolutely critical, I think, for the world.
I keep trying to imagine what it means to be a farmer in the context of the kind of devastation and war that we are seeing in Ukraine. Is this about the Ukrainian government? Is this about the Ukrainian economy? Are these outsiders trying to do the they, or are these Russian occupiers trying to get the grain out? What's happening here? Who's the they?
Okay, well, obviously the Ukrainian farmers and the government, they want to get the grain out because that's a very important component of their national economy. To get the grain out, you know, you have the United Nations now under discussions. Poland is helping. Romania is talking about using one of its cities, but, you know, that's really challenging. Obviously, you'd have to be talking to the Russians, and there are all sorts of sensitivities associated with that.
What are you hearing from some of your colleagues at the Kiev School of Economics about this food crisis?
They've actually just recently, a few days ago, released a major study on the damages in the war to agriculture in terms of the machinery that's been damaged, the silos that have been damaged, the thefts and so on, and also even the mining of agricultural fields. And it's in the billions of dollars already. So that is huge. And at the same time, the analyses are showing that, you know, the way to really, you know, get the food out is via the Black Sea. Okay, that's the most efficient way. That's the most cost-effective way. Because you have these big containers and so forth and these big ships. And using trucks and rail is just a stopgap measure. Right now, only about 1.5 million tons are being exported a month. And we really need at least the level of 5 million metric tons each month. So you see, there are great, great challenges right now, logistically, you know, but and we need greater cooperation. So a lot of attention being put on this major crisis, but we need also a resolution to it, and we need it soon. And this just shows another reason why this unprovoked war of Russia against Ukraine needs to be stopped. It's having global ramifications and will continue to have global ramifications.
Now, is what's happening one of these unfortunate, painful externalities of war, or is Russia weaponizing food?
That's an excellent point. I'm actually grateful that you bring it up. It's been about 90 years that we're marking now since what is known as the Holodomor, okay, which occurred in 1932-1933 in Ukraine and also USSR. Okay, Holod in Ukrainian means hunger, so it was essentially death by hunger. And it arose because Stalin collectivized the farms and also confiscated a lot of the food that was grown by the farmers in Ukraine. And it's been estimated that about 4 million Ukrainians perished because they starved. There were even cases horrific of cannibalization. And about probably 1 million people, if not more, in other republics of the then USSR. Okay, so this has essentially happened before. Okay, Ukraine has very rich soil, okay, fantastic agriculture. The farmers, they are my heroes. They are still somehow managing to plant and harvest, even in wartime, as best as they possibly can. And it's historic, it, you know, deja vu again, you know, 90 years after, see what's happening.
I think so many of us are finding many unexpected heroes in Ukraine, and undoubtedly the farmers are among them. Anna Nagurny, Chair in Integrative Studies, the Eisenberg School of Management at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure. And do take care, everyone.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.